474-3662 or go to CharityMobile.com today.
This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Crescent in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
A good Catholic is a faithful citizen.
Make America great again!
What's more important here is not saving the country, it's saving your soul.
It's a bold strategy.
Let's see if it pays off for us.
Trust in the media has hit its lowest point.
I want the truth!
What is truth?
The age of the passive layperson can't go on.
It's our job to share that love of Christ with the people.
This is an excellent mission, sir, with an extremely valuable objective.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Al, this is an excellent program.
You have a wonderful show.
I love listening in my car.
That's a great question to start off with.
You are in for a show tonight.
Here we go again.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Do you remember the phrase that used to be common in medical profession, and lay people heard it as well? Cure. C-U-R-E. Cure. And if you cannot cure, care. C-A-R-E. It's really a nice maxim. It kind of sums up the older style of the physician. Of course, that has been changing. I remember in the late 80s, actually, and then into the 90s, Dr. Death, Jack Kevorkian, was a guest on my program. This is when he was developing a suicide machine, and before he became quite as notorious as we came to know him. But he was there trying to help people end their lives because they were engaged in intractable suffering. The truth is, Jack Kevorkian was fascinated by death. I did a piece for World Magazine profiling him, and his life was taken up with, working with prison inmates, those on death row, hoping that he could extract social benefits from their inevitable deaths. In other words, harvest their organs. He liked to hang around in morgues and do eye exams on the corpses. I kid you not. He was interested in death. And, of course, he ended up being tried for murder when he went and publicly practiced euthanasia. But he gave rise to the physician-assisted suicide debate in its most striking form, which then gave rise to a much larger issue. What do we do as we approach death? What are the questions that we're going to have to answer? What are the problems we're going to have to solve? How do we handle end-of-life issues? When does care become burdensome? What about food and water? Is a feeding tube extraordinary treatment? What does the church teach about helping put, quote, someone out of their misery? Well, those are the questions we're going to spend some time with Jason Negri. Jason is an attorney. He's also the assistant director of the Patients' Rights Council. He is a friend from many years ago now. He's a lawyer serving in Southeast Michigan and has done a great job of capsuling these questions in a great little booklet called End of Life Issues, published by Catholic Answer. So stay with me. We've got a lot that we're going to be going, a lot of these questions related to durable power of attorney for health care, living wills, physician's orders for life-sustaining treatment, all that stuff will be coming up in the next hour. But right now, what I'd like to do is get to the news headlines with Nick Tom.
Thank you very much, Al. Welcome, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Friday, May 12th. It is the feast of Saints Nerilius and Achilles, and today's news is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. Vice President Mike Pence is pledging his prayers and support for persecuted Christians around the world. He told them and members of other religions being persecuted for their beliefs that he and President Trump stand with them. Pence made the comments yesterday while speaking at a conference
hosted by the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association in Washington, D.C. The first World Summit in Defense of Persecuted Christians is intended to bring attention to the situation of persecuted Christians and advocate for their rights in countries where they are targeted or harassed for their beliefs. The U.S. and China have agreed to the first phase of a new trade agreement. We'll get more from correspondent Bill Zimfer.
It turns out chicken and beef are key parts of the first step of the deal. Under the agreement, China will allow U.S. imports of beef, while the U.S. would allow Chinese cooked poultry to enter U.S. markets. China had banned imports of U.S. beef in 2003 after an outbreak of mad cow disease in this country. That ban was lifted last year, but few purchases were made. Bill Zimfer, NBC News Radio.
The future relationship between the Boy Scouts and the Mormon Church remains in question. One of the BSA's top commissioners said he is unsure if the two organizations will remain partners far into the future after the church yesterday announced its ending involvement in two programs. The church dropped the varsity and venture programs for youths 14 through 18. It now says it might eventually replace younger scout programs with a global church program. North Korea is apparently engaging in a letter-writing campaign. Details from correspondent Bill Zimfer.
The latest salvo from North Korea came in the form of a letter to the U.S. House of Representatives. That letter, published by North Korea's state news agency, denounces U.S. sanctions against North Korea as the, quote, most heinous act against humanity and a violation of the U.N. Charter. No word on whether the letter will be answered. Bill Zimfer, NBC News Radio.
And President Trump is still considering what moves to make in a war-torn Afghanistan. In a briefing today, National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster says no decision has been made. Lawmakers in New South Wales have defeated a bid to liberalize the Australian state's abortion laws. The proposed legislation, similar to laws that already stand in other Australian jurisdictions, would have decriminalized abortion. It would also have set up exclusion zones around abortion clinics, denying access to pro-life counselors. Abortion is legal in New South Wales today, only when the mother's health is judged to be in danger. Proponents of a more liberal policy said that they will continue to press for change. And NASA is marking a major milestone today, sending two astronauts outside the International Space Station to complete spacewalk number 200. Peggy Whitson and Jack Fisher were supposed to kick off the spacewalk at 8 a.m. Eastern Time, but ran into some issues.
A small leak of water was detected at the connection point between the service and cooling umbilical, or SCU as it is known, that was connected to Jack Fisher's suit at the time.
The suit is fine, and the mission is continuing. And now your fascinating fact for the day. In Antarctica, sunsets can actually be green. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
Good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. Our recent discussion over Obamacare's so-called death panel raises an even more important issue, a broader issue. And what is it that the church does teach about dignity at the end of life? Baby boomers, of course, coming of age now, where they're going to be passing from this this world. And it's a big pig in the python problem. There's going to be lots of demands for reforming, rearranging, reconsidering palliative care and physician-assisted suicide. You know, we know the Catholic Church gives us tremendous guidance in many of these areas. But still, questions like burdensome, responsible care, what do those terms actually mean in particular situations? Joining me to help us answer questions about end-of-life issues is Jason Negri. He's the author of 20 Answers, End-of-Life Issues, published by Catholic Answers, and available, 20 Answers, excuse me, 20 Answers, End-of-Life Issues, published by Catholic Answers. It's available at shop.com. jasoncatholic.com. Jason serves as an attorney in Southeast Michigan. He's a member of the inaugural class of Ave Maria School of Law in 2003. That's where we met. And you can also follow his work at Jason Negri, N-E-G-R-I, jasonnegri.com. It's good to have you.
Thanks, Al. Thanks for having me.
This is funny. We've been watching this. I interviewed Jack Kevorkian way, way years ago when he first came up with the suicide machine. And Michigan was a hot spot for discussing physician-assisted suicide. It went to the polls. Michiganders rejected it. But it seems to have a second, third, and fourth life. In other words, this is one of those things that just keeps coming back.
It does.
You know? So in the last year, we've had Brittany Maynard brought out as the poster girl for euthanasia, physician-assisted suicide. Let's talk about your work in forming answers for Catholics. What do you think... Is there a particular area which you think we are most confused?
I think certainly the other side, the advocates for doctor-prescribed suicide, have done an excellent job in framing the terms of the discussion.
Yeah.
They have co-opted the moral high ground, in one sense, by claiming that their position is the more compassionate one, and portraying anybody who disagrees with them, any of us who think that, you know what, doctor-prescribed suicide is not the solution that you're making it out to be, any of us who oppose this move somehow lack compassion, somehow we don't care, somehow we want people to suffer.
Yeah.
They paint us all with an extremely broad and erroneous, I might add, religious brush, saying that anybody who opposes doctor-prescribed suicide must be doing so only for religious reasons, and it's because we want people to suffer. And I think that's the real confusion, is because people, there's a certain amount of historical truth to the idea of the redemptive value of suffering, certainly, but people glom onto this and think that just because that's true, therefore suffering is a good thing that we should be pursuing, and therefore we're not doing anything at all to help people who are truly suffering, and that's just not true.
So they're able to confuse the elimination of suffering with the elimination of the sufferer.
Precisely.
And if we're unwilling to eliminate the sufferer, we lack compassion.
Mm-hmm. And particularly in America, this resonates with the idea of choice. They've co-opted the language of the discussion.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about death with dignity, and they say that it's their choice. If you don't want to die like this, fine, but don't hold back me if this is something that I want to do. And they don't probe deeper to see the larger effects that this is having on society.
You know, I would be interesting to know if the founders of this movement for euthanasia or physician-assisted suicide, and they are to be distinguished, which we'll do in just a minute here, it'd be interesting to know, in terms of their own psychology and their own history, how they looked upon death growing up. I wonder if there's an inordinate fear of death.
It wouldn't surprise me. I think Americans in particular have that inordinate fear of death.
Yeah.
We built our entire culture based upon the idea that we're always going to be in our impregnable youth. We're always, you know, supposed to look, act, and feel as if we're 25 and we're productive members of society. And as soon as we realize that that ain't the case anymore,
right.
You know, some people say, well, then I just want to check out at that point on my own terms.
I was talking to a Ugandan priest about this, and you know, when I asked him, what struck you most when you first came to the United States? He said, how far away you are from death. That's a lie. I didn't expect that. But where he grew up and where he is living now, death is a regular companion.
It is. It is
you
a
do
part
see,
of life.
You see corpses. You see suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And it can seem arbitrary. But it's you can't escape it.
Precisely. The way people in America have been able to do. A good friend of mine in my hometown is the funeral director for the local funeral home.
Oh.
He told me a couple of years ago something that has always stuck with me. He said, I routinely have people in their 40s coming to wakes at my funeral home who have never been to a wake before in their entire lives.
Yeah.
I mean, how removed from reality
is that?
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. Let's go to some distinctions. Physician-assisted suicide is, euthanasia is. What's the difference?
Okay, good question. Physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia can be distinguished by who it is does the last act that results in the patient's death. Euthanasia, the final act, whether it's usually a lethal injection or some other less sanitized means, is done by somebody else. In physician-assisted suicide, or as we call it, doctor-prescribed suicide, the final act, that of taking the pills or administering the injection, is done by the patient, him or herself.
Yeah. Now, is suicide against the law?
No. Suicide is no longer against the law in any state in America, but we shouldn't look at that the reason that was done, I should say, is precisely because we had a societal change in perception, recognizing that you should not criminalize something right. which is done by people who are so obviously hurting and crying out for help and so in despair that they are resorting to this right. act. So the states very deliberately, one by one, decriminalized suicide as being futile and counterproductive. But that doesn't mean that they've changed the laws regarding assisting somebody else
right.
in killing themselves.
That's important because it's, in a sense, physician-assisted suicide isn't really that much suicide. You're asking someone to kind of do it for you, right?
Right, right. The complicity of the other person.
Physician-assisted homicide, I guess.
yeah, you could look at it that way. That's yeah. true.
Let's go to the basic question that everybody asks, and that is, people are suffering intolerably. We've done all we can. I can't stand to watch my loved one suffer like this. Good heavens, if I even saw a pet suffering like this, I would put that pet out of his misery. And you're telling me, here's my loved one begging me to be released, and I can't do that as an act of final compassion for them?
Look, I absolutely understand the motivation to want to do that, to try to alleviate somebody else's suffering by any means necessary. However, it is obviously a big problem when that mentality catches on in society and becomes the preferred solution. You're dealing with a person who is possibly suffering a great deal. First of all, you have to remember that medical technology and science has advanced to a point where there really does not need to be anybody who is suffering to that degree. This palliative care,
yeah.
Pain control and management, all these things have made significant strides in the past few decades. And if you're suffering or somebody that you love is suffering to that degree, I think it's probably past time to try to find a doctor right. who is actually board certified yeah. in pain control and understands this and can actually help the person.
Yeah, yeah. I had my leg amputated, it must be 10 years ago now, above the knee, and it was painful. And it took a lot of work to get comfort. But I like to tell people, look, it was painful, but it wasn't intolerable. We were able to make it tolerable. So, now that I'm not talking here about cancer and talking about an amputation, which is probably a lot easier. But we'll come back and continue the conversation with Jason Negri, talking about reasons that people want to commit suicide.
Exciting times to be had at the 48th Annual Spring Festival at St. Joan of Arc Parish in St. Clair Shores from Friday, May 19th to Sunday, May 21st, featuring a major raffle with a $10,000 first prize, rides, entertainment, and delicious carnival fare. Google St. Joan of Arc Festival for more details, or call the hotline at 586-773-1602. That's 586-773-1602.
Do you have questions about Medicare? Are you turning 65? How do you get the answers you need from someone you can trust? You can call Brett Huffmaster at the Huffmaster Group. Brett is a licensed agent with over 10 different insurance companies, always searching for the best value, including prescription, dental, and vision. If you don't know insurance, know your agent. Brett Huffmaster. Call 888-447-6565 for a free quote today. That's 888-447-6565.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is made possible in part by a gift made from our day sponsor. To celebrate the 50th wedding anniversary of Mike and Pat Quinn. Marriage is both a covenant and a calling, where each spouse lovingly assists the other in becoming a saint. Invite God into your marriage. He will bless you. If you want to be a day sponsor and or want to say a message for a loved one or friend, call 877-288-1077. Whether it's a car accident, storm damage, or a fire, when the unthinkable happens, it doesn't matter if you save money in 15 minutes. In this moment, it doesn't matter if your neighbor has the same insurance you do. In this moment, what matters is that your independent insurance agent and the company that stands behind them have you covered. Choice Insurance Agency, an auto owner's insurance company, will do just that. Call Choice Insurance Agency at 734-641-4200. Holy Spirit Roman Catholic School is the number one elementary school in the Diocese of Lansing in language arts and mathematics. Their children pray every day. Located off U.S. 23, south of Brighton, take exit 55. Holy Spirit is founded on the belief that they must educate the minds, bodies, and souls of children through faith and academics in accordance with the teachings of the Church. Tuition rates are very affordable, and their teaching staff is top-notch. Come see them at HolySpiritRCS.org. FSI Label Company is a proud sponsor of Catholic Radio and a trusted label source for thousands of customers in numerous industries nationwide. FSI Label provides quality label solutions for any application that your business requires, and FSI is family-owned since 1971 and ISO 9001 certified for quality assurance. Turn to FSI Label for your next label requirement at FSILabel.com. Your quality product deserves a quality label. Go to FSILabel.com today.
Ann Arbor Smiles is a state-of-the-art dental practice led by the talents of Drs. Dan Kennedy, Chris Marzoni, and Stephen Gray. One of their many satisfied patients is Debbie Herbeck, the wife of Fire on the Earth host Peter Herbeck.
For the past 25 years, our family has been going to Drs. Kennedy and Marzoni, and we've been receiving quality dental care. And one of the things we love about going there, besides all the friendly faces, is that the dentists really do know us, and they're really there to serve the needs of our family.
Go to AnnArborSmiles.com today.
Beacon Skin and Surgeries is a comprehensive dermatology center on the border of Troy and Rochester Hills, south of M59, and in Dearborn, west of Telegraph. Beacon Skin and Surgeries perform full skin exams and focus on the diagnosis and treatment of all types of skin cancer and precancerous lesions. All are board-certified dermatologists and fellowship-trained surgeons. Call 248-852-1900. Beacon Skin and Surgeries, a beacon for patient care. 248-852-1900.
I can't be like this, Frankie. Not after what I've done. I've seen the world. People chanted my name. I was in magazines. I got what I needed. I got it all. Don't let them keep taking it away from me. Don't let me lie here till I can't hear those people chant no more.
I can't. Please. Please don't ask me.
I'm asking.
I can't.
That, of course, is the climactic scene for Million Dollar Baby. Clint Eastwood film that got a great deal of attention because it brings into assisted suicide right into our living rooms. I mean, obviously that was well played in the movie, and it's heartbreaking. But that's one instance of a person still presented as competent, making the decision that they want to be put out of their misery. What are the reasons people give? Pain seems to be obvious, but are there other reasons that competent people give for wanting to be assisted to end their life?
Yes. Pain is obviously the reason that the assisted suicide or doctor-prescribed suicide advocates really promote, because that's the one, of course, that carries the most sympathy. It paints the most sympathetic picture for the patient and the pain that they might be experiencing. But if we look to the state of Oregon, and doctor-prescribed suicide was approved there in 1994. So it's really the state that has the biggest track record.
Right. Where we got their numbers.
Right. So they keep track of those numbers every year. Now, you do have to remember that the numbers have a caveat that they are voluntarily reported.
Right.
So it's really anybody's guess as to just how reliable they are. obviously the doctors who are reporting it are the ones who are complicit in their patients' suicides, and they're not going to want to report anything that goes wrong.
Right.
So with that caveat understood, at least there is some alleged data, some reported information. And keeping track of the reasons why patients in Oregon have chosen to do this, it does paint a very interesting picture. Pain is not at the top of the list.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. The top, the strongest reasons, the most popular reasons why people give this has to do with choice and autonomy. Has to do with not being able to do things they used to be able to do, activities that make their life enjoyable.
Wow.
You know, in the case of Million Dollar Baby, the quote that we just heard, you know, it's remembering that this is a Hollywood movie, you know, it's designed to tug on your heartstrings and make you sympathetic to their position. But if you're looking at this, I mean, the pride and autonomy that are implicit in that quote just comes across
That's
so clearly. She wants to be able to go while she's still on top.
Right.
She doesn't like the idea of being vulnerable or debilitated or in any way diminished from the success that she was able to experience. Well, you know, okay, look, I get it. You know, I'm an American too. I understand how important it is to feel like you've achieved, like you are at the top of your game, like you're a productive member of society. But you know what? With advanced age usually comes debilitations of some sort. So I think it is very telling that to whatever degree we can rely upon these statistics in Oregon, I do think it's very telling that loss of autonomy, loss of dignity, loss of bodily functions, the inability to do things that you once were able to do, these are all the top reasons that people are giving. Okay,
what percentage of people roughly would say pain?
Well, it's impossible to actually say that because even though approximately 23 or 24% of the respondents talk about this, the way the question is phrased in Oregon is inadequate pain control or concern about it. Okay, those two things are lumped together. It doesn't mean that the people are actually suffering pain. It means they're afraid that they might. It's lumped in together as the very same reason given. There's no way to know if anybody who did this in Oregon was actually suffering intractable pain. Everybody's afraid of suffering pain. Lord knows I am.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no doubt about it. And it's true, the anticipation of pain actually can be painful.
Yes.
So that adds to it. People are dying. Isn't there a way of just hastening the process?
Well, sure. I guess there is a way of hastening the process. But generally speaking, most people who are concerned about doing the right thing don't approve of this way of hastening the process.
Right, right.
It's going back to what we talked about earlier in terms of our psychological removal from death. And that is, in other cultures and historically, it used to be seen as a very normal thing. It is, in fact, part of everybody's life. It ends the same way. But this removal from it has resulted in people not knowing how to deal with it. They don't know how to deal with death. We've sanitized it and removed it to the province of the funeral director, the undertaker, and then in some states, the doctor, who is complicit in this. It is a very efficient way in some ways to put an end to something that people don't want to think about. But I really think that we ought to be better served by taking a more mature approach to this. The other side talks a lot about what they call death with dignity. I think we'd be better served to be looking at life with dignity and death with maturity, recognizing that when it comes, we accept it, we embrace it as the friend that St. Francis talked about.
Yeah.
But it's not something to be hastened, precisely because you start down that slope, you take the life of an innocent person with or without their permission. The fact that they're giving you permission to do so doesn't change the fact that that's doing something to the person who's acting. You're helping somebody else end their life, which in any other context is seen as horrific. In any other context, we look at suicide as being a terrible, terrible thing that we try to stop at all costs. Well, why do we change it here?
Yeah. The agent gets changed in this.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Okay, let's talk about then this question of intrusive care, burdensome care. What are the criteria we look for when we say no more treatment?
This is a really important conversation for people to have with their loved ones. And as an attorney, I have this conversation with all of my clients who come in talking about doing an estate plan. It's fundamental to the conversation about doing a medical power of attorney. I think there certainly is a climate right now that there is a fear of over-treatment. There are cases trumpeted in the news all the time about the raising the specter of people dying hooked up to tubes and unable right. to function, and you can't talk to the people around you. You have no awareness what's going on. You're being kept alive by tubes is yeah. the moniker that people yeah. tend to use. And to whatever degree that's true, I think it is problematic. I found it very interesting. I attended a conference in Chicago a couple of years back, sponsored by the organization Compassion and Choices, the nation's foremost yeah. pro-assisted suicide group. And they used to be known as the Hemlock Society, yeah. the apt name.
Not quite as compassionate sounding.
Right, exactly. Hence, they changed their name for obvious reasons.
Him, by the way.
Have you?
The founder, yeah.
Okay.
Derek Humphreys.
Right.
And his wife, who eventually died.
His second wife. Yes.
Yeah,
there's a whole story behind that.
There is. Rita Marker tells it well in her book.
Deadly Compassion.
Deadly Compassion. Thanks for remembering the title.
Absolutely.
I wasn't sure if I was going to get that.
but anyway, so I attended this conference incognito. They didn't know which side of the issue that I was on. I just went as an attorney who was interested yeah. in the issue. I was a little surprised, first of all, to find that, we all tend to demonize the opposition.
Right, right.
Bunch of really great people there.
I know.
Really nice people with really laudable motives. They're yeah. nice people, and they think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the part that makes it so dangerous, is that these people are very likable and pleasant, and they think they're doing the moral thing. One thing I did find fascinating is that I walked away from that conference agreeing with probably 80% of what they were saying in their various sessions that I attended, because most of what they talked about was precisely this issue that you brought up of over-treatment.
Yeah.
That's where they get a whole lot of public support behind them, because they talk about what is a very real problem. I believe that our current medical system does have a financial incentive for doctors to over-treat, and certainly fear of litigation plays into this too. Doctors would rather do too much than too little because they're afraid of being sued. So as a consequence of this, you have people who perhaps are experiencing more treatment as just the recommended course that their doctors are saying, you really should do this, without any real frank discussion as to the benefit they can expect to receive from it. So most people don't look at it in these terms, but there really is, to use a business term, there really is a cost-benefit analysis, mm-hmm. although in moral terms we call it a benefit-versus-burden analysis.
Okay. What is the Catholic moral position on this?
Well, the position is precisely assessing what sort of benefit the patient might be able to reasonably expect, from this treatment that's being proposed, and weighing that against the burden that the treatment is also going mm-hmm. to incur. And that means the physical burden, the side effects that usually accompany certain types of treatment,
mm-hmm.
Even the financial burden that the
sure.
patient and the patient's family may experience. That does play into it legitimately. And that fact makes some people a little bit uncomfortable, the whole idea that we're talking about money at a time
right.
like this.
Right.
Well, we are unfortunately dealing with finite medical resources.
That is true.
And there is a cost to these things. So pulling all of that into the mix, it's really the patient's, and that has to be remembered too, it is the patient's determination of burden versus
okay.
benefit, not somebody else's, not the medical bean counters, not the ethics committee, not anybody else. They can make recommendations and talk about it, but it really needs to be left up to the patient to determine whether this proposed treatment is going to offer a sufficient benefit to them to outweigh the burden that it might be costing.
I think that, we're talking about a person who is dying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what we're asking is, are we obligated to prolong their death?
That's a good question, and that is another misunderstanding. No.
Yeah,
absolutely not.
We're not, right?
And I have to tell you, the other side gets a lot of mileage by saying that we do.
Yeah.
saying that, that the Catholic or the religious position is that you have to prolong life at all costs, and that it's not obligatory.
I agree. This is I'm always surprised that people misunderstand the teaching of the church on this.
Yes.
And they think it's you keep them alive at all costs at the very end, and they have some screwy theological notion that, oh, yeah, well, if there's life there, that means God's there, and you if you stop it, you're stopping God.
Right. It's it's called vitalism.
Yes, and that's right. Good. That's good.
It's allowable. It's permissible if somebody has that position, and I have clients who take that position in their documents.
Sure.
The vast majority of people, though, they say, no, not life at all costs. There will be a time. There is a line to be drawn at some point, and I'm going to leave it up to my trusted decision maker to make that call.
Yeah. Hold it there, Jason. We're going to continue on the other side of the break. My guest is Attorney Jason Negri. Our topic, end-of-life issues. Jason has put together an outstanding little booklet, 20 Answers, as part of a series that Catholic Answers does called 20 Answers. And this is end-of-life issues. I'm Al Cresta, and more coming up.
Hallelujah, brothers and sisters. Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. Hello, friends. This is Father Patrick from the Archdiocese of Detroit's Office of Evangelization, wishing you and all yours a happy Easter. You know, friends, when the early apostles saw that Jesus Christ was risen from the dead, everything changed. Can you imagine the joy that they experienced when they saw the risen Christ? All their hopes and dreams, a life lived in the love of God, a life lived with the joy of Christ who filled their deepest desires. Can you imagine the joy they experienced when they saw the risen Christ? Brothers and sisters, that's the joy Jesus wants for us. And that's the joy that Jesus wants us to share with the world. I want to invite you this Easter season, get busted for being joyful. Let somebody ask you, geez, you're in a good mood. Why are you in such a good mood? And let them know, it's Jesus. It's the joy of Easter. He is alive. And I want to invite you to consider purchasing a subscription to the Michigan Catholic for yourself or for someone you love. Visit themichigancatholic.org. It's a great way to keep that fire of divine love going in your heart. God bless you, friends.
When a kid loses a tooth, it's exciting. But an adult has some serious decisions that needs a caring, faithful, and family-oriented dentist like Dr. Maddie with Advanced Dentistry Center. Here's what Dr. Maddie says to those that are deciding between bridges and implants.
While bridges only last 8 to 10 years and damage adjacent teeth, implants last up to 30 years and help prevent bone loss. Plus, they look more natural.
Extremely natural, with Dr. Maddie, who practices the art of dentistry at Advanced Dentistry Center. Conveniently located at 13 Mile and Telegraph, make the decision to call 248-594-9592 or click AdvancedDentistryCenter.com. Mention Ave Maria and receive 10% off dental implants. Be comfortable knowing that Advanced Dentistry Center's goal is to provide you with the most up-to-date treatments to help you look and feel your best. That's 248-594-9592.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten in part by Charity Mobile. Communication is critical. And in today's world, your cellular service is your lifeline to family and friends. Ave Maria Radio and Charity Mobile are partners in communicating the most important message of all, the good news of Jesus Christ. Charity Mobile is a provider of cellular LTE phones and service and has been a proud supporter of Ave Maria Radio and other pro-life causes for more than 10 years. More information at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile. Charity begins at phone.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Mutual Funds. Investment funds that are designed and screened to be pro-life and pro-family. Six different Ave Maria Mutual Funds are available to help you reach your long-term investment objectives. Smart investing and Catholic values. The number to learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds is 866-AVE-MARIA. That's 866-283-6274 or at AveMariaFunds.com.
This is Lewis Brown, director of CMF Curo, a Catholic healthcare ministry that provides an affordable Catholic healthcare option nationwide. We have come to a unique time in our history. Healthcare costs are rising and our religious freedom is being challenged. CMF Curo empowers you to live the new evangelization in your healthcare. Visit our website for more information about CMF Curo. Go to cmfcuro.com. That's CMFCURO.com. Christian caring, Christian sharing.
Hi, I'm Dan Weingartz. Join us for our Time to Mow sale going on now through May 20th. Our family has been helping families like yours choose the right power equipment for your lawn since 1945. Our experts will help you choose the right product from top brands like Steel. From legendary chainsaws, dependable trimmers, and powerful blowers, a Steel is designed for reliability and built for the long haul. Visit us to see the full Steel line or see all of our Time to Mow sale specials at Weingartz.com.
Weingartz! Weingartz! Everything from lawn to snow!
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me is Attorney Jason Negri, author of End of Life Issues. We were talking during the break that you are involved with a group that's helping people think clearly and articulate clearly these issues. What is this group called?
It's the name of the group is the Patients' Rights Council.
Okay. And, Patients' Rights Council.
It's based in Steubenville, Ohio. Mm-hmm. It's been around for 30-somewhat years, dealing specifically with these end-of-life issues, talking about opposing doctor-prescribed suicide and euthanasia, talking about proper end-of-life medical ethics, helping individuals and their families who find themselves in these situations where needed and wanted care is being denied. So we write about these issues, we speak out about them, and one of our more recent things is doing these seminars. I mean, we give general presentations on these issues all the time, but more recently, we've become aware of the fact that there simply aren't enough people out there who are aware of what's going on and who are talking out and speaking out about it. So we've got these seminars that we started doing called Words That Work. And we go into situations where we speak to anywhere from 10 to 25 people, people who are interested in the issue, people who are committed to it, people who want to do something about it, and we give them the tools and the information that they need so that they can go out and speak effectively and cogently just within their own circles, their family, their friends, their coworkers.
How do you organize those groups?
Well, there's costs involved, of course. There's travel,
sure.
Expenses, materials and stuff. And basically, if there is an interested organization or individual, they can contact the Patients' Rights Council and let us know that this is something they want to do. They want to have us in and give this presentation. And so we handle the details with them, and our executive director and or myself will come in and do this talk for them.
Is it good to do for parishes?
Parishes could do it, certainly. Organizations that are interested in this. We did one very interesting one, actually, in Denver, Colorado, back in January, when their doctor-prescribed suicide bill had just been introduced. Yeah. And we spoke to a group of medical professionals because they were going to be asked a lot of questions. Some of them are going to be testifying, and they wanted to know, how do we best deal with this? How do we articulate the concerns that we have about this?
Well, this sounds tremendous. Where can people get a hold of you on that?
They can, if you're internet savvy, you can come to our website. It's www.patientsrightscouncil.org, or certainly please call our 1-800 number, 1-800-958-5678.
Okay, give me that one more time, would you?
800-958-5678.
Let's talk about something that always arises when we're talking about end-of-life issues, and that has to do with food and water, mm-hmm. nutrition, hydration, feeding tubes, and whether the insertion of a feeding tube is considered burdensome.
That's a fantastic question, and I will say that this very specific issue really forms a substantive amount of the conversations we have on this.
Mm-hmm.
Food and water, however it's administered, really ought to be considered normative.
That's not extraordinary.
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, if you look at the nature of what food and water is, it's not therapeutic. It's not designed to cure a headache or mm-hmm. or cure cancer or anything like that. It's designed simply to provide sustenance to a living organism.
Right.
And whether you are a 25-year-old Olympic athlete in the height of health or an 87-year-old person with Parkinson's disease, you need food and water simply to stay alive.
Right.
So the idea behind it is that so long as the body is continuing to process food and water, so long as the organs are still processing nutrition and hydration, it's considered normative to continue to provide it. Whereas this could be contrasted with medical treatment, which is therapeutic, which is designed to have a specific medical purpose. and which might be deemed to be extraordinary under certain circumstances, and thus potentially removable.
So somebody says, though, oh, putting a feeding tube in there, though, that is extraordinary, isn't it? That isn't ordinary.
Right, and I totally understand why people think that. The fact that it's being introduced through a tube, whether it's through an intravenous needle or a J-tube or something like that, it seems to lend the air of medical treatment to it. And in fact, hospitals do, they define that as medical treatment precisely because that's how it's being introduced. A lot of people have this discussion, and my position is that it's food and water. It's normative. It is possible to ethically remove food and water, but the circumstances under which that's permissible is much fewer instances than medical treatment. Mm-hmm. And the reason I give that caveat is because there are circumstances when somebody is actively dying, when the dying process has begun. And I don't know if you have, but if you've ever had the privilege of being with somebody when they are dying, it is very, very common for them to voluntarily stop eating and drinking.
Yeah.
If they're cognizant, if they're aware, and they have the ability to make that choice and express it, they will voluntarily stop eating and drinking. Mm-hmm. They're simply no longer hungry and thirsty. The body does start to shut down. The organs reject it. And if you do force food and water on somebody in a situation like that, it actually could become very painful and counterproductive. It's backing up in their system and causing problems, because they're not processing it anymore. Mm-hmm. I've had to set a priest straight on this because they were of the opinion that it's absolute. It's an absolute moral norm that you have to always give food and water, and that is not the case.
No, the patient still has the right to say,
yes,
I'm done.
Yes, absolutely. And if the patient can do it, then it's reasonable to assume that the patient's decision maker can also make that decision on behalf of a patient who can't communicate their own wishes, again, under these very limited circumstances.
How common is it for people to starve to death or dehydrate to death?
Well, this isn't the sort of thing that they keep statistics on.
Right.
It is supposed, and I've heard lots of anecdotal evidence saying that this happens all the time, that somebody is food and water had been being given through a tube or intravenously, and that was removed because it was deemed to be futile medical treatment because the person wasn't going to get any better. So the doctor, the hospital staff, whoever it is, simply decided to remove the food and water. They ostensibly got the patient's decision maker to make that decision and to go ahead and remove it. But then they mask the symptoms with an increased dose of morphine so that the patient is sedated.
I've heard that.
Right. So the normal pain that a person would experience in dehydrating to death is masked by the morphine.
Mm.
Mm. It's still happening, though.
Let's talk about end-of-life devices, tools. We've got the what we call living wills. We've got durable power of attorney. There are now these posts, physician's order for life-saving, life-sustaining treatment.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between these various devices and instruments?
Mm-hmm. The living will and the durable power of attorney for healthcare are both subsumed under the general heading of an advance directive.
Advance directive, okay.
Right. And as the name suggests, these documents lay out in advance the sort of care you do or don't want, in a given circumstance. Now, the fundamental difference between those first two documents is the living will may or may not identify a decision maker for you, but the purpose of the living will is precisely to say, I do want this sort of care or I don't want this sort of medical care if these circumstances happen.
So I'm writing down my wishes.
Exactly.
If this happens, do this.
Right. If this happens, do that. Now, it might not seem a lot
of options, though.
Well, absolutely. And it might not seem obvious to the initial observer, but it's a living will is seriously problematic for a couple of reasons. First of all, I can almost guarantee you that whatever you had the foresight to put in your living will is probably not what's going to happen to you.
Yeah.
You can't possibly plan for every contingency with a living will. But the more fundamental problem with the living will is the issue of interpretation. Who's going to interpret it? You may know what you want, and you may think that your beloved spouse or adult child or whoever is going to be, whoever the medical staff is going to be turning to make these decisions for you, you may think that they know what you want.
Right.
But it's not up to them. If you have a living will, that's a blank check to any doctor anywhere, no matter where you find yourself. You may trust your physician, but what if you're in an accident in West Virginia or California or anywhere else?
Right.
A doctor that you don't know is going to have full interpretative authority over what happens to you based upon what you put in the living will. So I think they're really problematic, and a lot of other people who work in this area feel the same way.
Durable power of attorney, in contrast.
Right. The durable power of attorney for healthcare is absolutely the preferred means of doing this. It still has the idea, you're still advanced planning. You're still making other people aware that, yeah, I've thought about this. What do you want? Well, ask my decision maker. The whole idea behind a durable power of attorney for healthcare, just like other powers of attorney that we might be familiar with, a financial power of attorney, you're identifying somebody else to be your decision maker in the event you become unable to participate in your own medical decisions.
So this person has the advantage of being able to assess
precise
options that you could not foresee
mm-hmm.
when you wrote out your living will.
Exactly. They can assess the totality of the circumstances that you find yourself in, and they make the judgment call as to what treatment is appropriate. So you just have to give a little bit of advanced thought as to who this best decision maker is going to be for you. Make sure you speak to them while you're still alive and competent, and make sure that you execute the document properly. And the Patients' Rights Council, we have a document of this sort. We've done all the research for all 50 states. We've got documents that comply with every state law.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so.
In fact, we've talked about this before. How can people get a hold of it, Advanced Directive for Healthcare?
The same information I gave before. If you go to the website, patientsrightscouncil.org, or you call that 1-800 number, 800-958-5678.
Now, also, this physician's order for life-sustaining treatment, POLST.
That's the new kid on the block.
That's right. This is the new one.
Mm-hmm.
What do you like about it? What don't you like about it?
The POLST has been described by both supporters and detractors as being a living will on steroids.
Okay.
The POLST takes all of the dangers of the living will and codifies it in an actual medical order. Now, those of us who don't work in the medical field may not understand that distinction too well, but the O in POLST, or in some states it's POST or MOST or whatever it is, but whatever the acronym is, the O always stands for order. The idea is that this is a medical order that's going to be going into your medical record,
okay.
And it is going to say, it's going to tell the doctor, the nursing staff, the hospital staff, whoever looks at your chart, they're going to see this document in there, and it is going to tell them what sort of care you do or don't want. They don't have to wake you up and talk to you. They don't have to ask you a single question. If you have this order in your medical record, that's it.
Yeah.
And you, obviously, this is a dangerous thing
right.
to have in place because circumstances change. You may talk to your doctor and have this medical order filled out at one point, and it might be appropriate for what you want. And then 4 months later, your condition may drastically deteriorate or improve,
yeah.
in which case that medical order
is still standing.
It's still standing,
yeah.
but it's not valid
yeah.
for your condition.
Yeah. Oh, we got about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
What somebody says, all right, very good points. However, I don't see what the big deal is. Physician-assisted suicide, what's the harm that can come from that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the obvious harm initially is to the individual patient, the person who mm-hmm. is requesting assistance and killing themselves. More often than not, this is a case of a cry for help. This is a person who they feel pressured. You know, there's pressure intrinsic to the situation.
Right.
We can't deny that. But there are also external pressures which may or may not be present. You've got family members who might be, not caring for them properly, making them feel like they are a burden. And that's, you know, so those pressures are very real, and it's a serious danger to the patient. But from a broader perspective, when we transform the crime of assisted suicide, as it is in 47 states right now, when we transform that into a legitimate medical treatment, it's going to be just like any other medical treatment, but it's always going to be the cheapest one. So finances play into this. We're having national conversations about the high cost of medical care, particularly at the end of life. Let's not pretend this isn't going to play into it.
Yeah, the temptation to hasten people out, I think, is going to be overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And people will themselves feel obligated.
Yes, they already do, and they will feel even more so if this becomes what starts as an option for some people who are begging for it can all too quickly become an expectation for everybody.
Give us the number for Patient Rights Council again.
1-800-958-5678.
Jason, thanks so much.
Thank you, Al.
I'm Al Cresta. Be back in a moment.
Holy Spirit Roman Catholic School is the number one elementary school in the Diocese of Lansing in language arts and mathematics. Their children pray every day. Located off US 23 south of Brighton, take exit 55.
Holy Spirit is founded on the belief that they must educate the minds, bodies, and souls of children through faith and academics in accordance with the teachings of the church. Tuition rates are very affordable, and their teaching staff is top-notch. Come see them at HolySpiritRCS.org.
Looking for affordable Catholic health care? Look no further. CMF Curo is the only Catholic health ministry which provides an established health care program, spiritual growth opportunities within Catholic community, and unique wellness programs and health tools. Plus, it is half the cost of many insurances. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com or visit cmfcuro.com. CMF Curo, it's my Catholic health care.
Hi, I'm Dan Weingartz. Join us for our Time to Mow sale going on now through May 20th. Our family has been helping families like yours choose the right power equipment for your lawn since 1945. Our experts will help you choose the right product from top brands like Steel. From legendary chainsaws, dependable trimmers, and powerful blowers, a Steel is designed for reliability and built for the long haul. Visit us to see the full Steel line or see all of our Time to Mow sale specials at Weingartz.com.
Weingartz! Weingartz! Everything from lawn to snow!
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is made possible in part by a gift made from our day sponsor to celebrate the 50th wedding anniversary of Mike and Pat Quinn. Marriage is both a covenant and a calling where each spouse lovingly assists the other in becoming a saint. Invite God into your marriage. He will bless you. If you want to be a day sponsor and or want to say a message for a loved one or friend, call 877-288-1077.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cressa. Thank you for being here today. I can't tell you how excited I am about the possibilities for this kind of education at the parish level, but having groups like Patients' Rights Council come in, relatively inexpensive too, to present these end-of-life questions. Can you imagine how helpful that would be for members of your parish? I just think that if we can get adults acting like adults, if we treat them like adults, they'll begin to say, yeah, I have to take my responsibility to consider these end-of-life issues. And where do you want them to get that information? I want them to get it through the church, through the parish, professional information. All right, the booklet is called End-of-Life Issues. Again, Jason Negri is the author. Catholic Answers has it at their website. Of course, you can get it in Catholic bookstores. Let me thank you for being with me this hour. Be back tomorrow. Another edition of Cresta in the Afternoon.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. The executive producer is Nick Tom. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Today's preview of this Sunday's Gospel is brought to you by the Truth and Life Audio Bible, available on the Ave Maria Radio app and at AveMariaRadio.net/Bible.
Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And when I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also, and you know the way where I am going.
Lord, we do not know where you are going. How can we know the way?
I am the way, and the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. If you had known me, you would have known my Father also. Henceforth, you know him and have seen him. Lord, show us the Father. Have I been with you so long, and yet you do not know me? He who has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show us the Father? Do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father in me? The words that I say to